Good evening. I believe we have a quorum, so we're going to call the meeting to order. Welcome to tonight's meeting for the Northern Regional Advisory Council. My name is Justin Oliver, and I'm the chair of the Northern RAC, and I represent the at-large, and I'm from West Haven. We're going to introduce the council to everyone, and we're going to start with Kevin, I believe, on this side, please.
Kevin McLeod, at-large, Plain City.
Aaron Johnson, sportsman, West Weber County.
Chris Oakstrom, Ogden, not consumptive.
Matt Clark, Ogden, at-large.
Randy Hutchison, at-large, Ogden.
David Earl, Beaver Dam, Northern Ag.
Junior Goring out of Deweyville and agriculture representing.
That's a bad sign when you have to look at your name tag to know who you are. Darren Perry, the Great Shoshone Nation.
Emily Genso, BLM.
Mike Lauder, sportsman's rep, Hooper.
Justin Doling with the Division of Wildlife. I serve as the executive secretary and I'm a non-voting member.
This is the first meeting. We have some new RAC members, and just to recognize them, those are here. So we have Emily, and then also we have Junior over there, and then our other new Casey Snyder, who's not here, that is going to try to make it here on time. He had another meeting that conflicted. And then also we have Ryan Brown, who is at a... His father is not doing very well and needed to spend some time with him. We'd also like to recognize, I believe we have two members of our wildlife board here. I believe I see did rec Byron Bateman and also Brett Selman, who is here as well. So we welcome them and recognize them here in attendance. I'm going to ask if you'd please join me in turning off your cell phones or your ringers, at least on your electronic devices, and so that we can have an uninterrupted meeting. The purpose of the Advisory Council is to gather input from public concerning wildlife management, policy, rules, and regulations. The Council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. The Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five regional advisory councils and sets policy for all protected species in Utah. I'd also ask that please respect everyone's right to an opinion, even if it conflicts with yours. There's no need for clapping or vocal outbursts to support or criticize others' comments. This meeting will be recorded for the transcription of minutes. The audio recording and minutes will be available on the DWR website. When speaking, we ask that you use the microphone and speak clearly into them. The public will use the microphone located at the front of the room, and we ask that the speakers should state their name and, if they wish, where they are from. We just again ask that you please speak into the microphone. If you begin, and I may need to interrupt you if we can't hear, we have to make sure that your comments are easily heard so that they can be recorded. I'm going to ask that everyone to please look at the agenda for tonight's meeting. If there's no objection, we'll approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. There being no objection, There being no objection, the agenda for tonight's meeting is approved. All right, the next business in order is the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Everyone should have received a copy of the minutes via email. Are there any corrections that needed to be made? Did everyone have a chance to look at the minutes? All right, seeing none, the minutes are approved as circulated. Okay, now our next business in order is the Wildlife Board update, and I've asked that Justin Doling would provide this report for us.
Okay, our last board meeting was probably a world record. I think we were done by about 11 o'clock. So there was just two action items that pertain to our last round of RACs, and the first was the turkey transplant list. The board moved to accept the wild turkey transplant list as presented, and that was unanimous. The second was collection, importation, and possession rule. That was the new herpetologist rule. And again, the board moved to accept the collection, importation, and possession rule amendments as presented, and that was also unanimous. The board did hold elections for a new chair and vice chair, and Byron Bateman is the new chair of the Wildlife Board, and Kevin Albrick is the vice chair.
We'll also now have him give a regional update, please.
So just a quick regional update. From our law enforcement section, they've indicated that the fishing in the High Uintas has picked up. Their contacts are up significantly, and along with violations. So they've been kind of focusing their effort mostly in the high country area of the Uintas. And the law enforcement AIS program, which includes the quagga interdiction part of the AIS program, is now under law enforcement, and they have an army of techs that basically check boats at our waters here in the northern region. And because of all the additional attention down at Lake Powell, we've been sending some of those techs to Lake Powell on the weekends to try to be a little more proactive with stopping quagga mussels from coming out of Lake Powell, because that is the only known source of an infestation here in Utah. So they've been spending a lot of time doing that. In our habitat section, they finished up some lop and scatter treatments on the cache, and they're also working on water developments in West Box Elder County, particularly the Newfoundland Mountains for bighorn sheep, and then guzzlers just outside of the Park Valley area for chuckers and big game. Our outreach section is interviewing for our outreach specialist. Erica Savage would assist Jody in taking the minutes, and she's moved on now, and so we'll be trying to replace her. They will also be holding a waterfowl clinic at the Farmington Bay Education Center in early August, and then planning for a field dressing clinic later in the year. In our Great Salt Lake program, the annual Phragmites treatment starts August the 12th and runs through about the first week in September. They are also starting to ban ducks at night during the month of August. If you have an interest in either one of those projects, please let me know, and I'll get you linked up. And then they plan to ban pelicans out on Gunnison Island. If you remember, a couple RAC meetings ago, they presented their Gunnison Island management plan, and so they'll be out there banding pelicans. I believe it's the 6th of August. And then our wildlife section, they're finishing up the sheep and goat unit management plans. They're starting their rabbit route counts in Box Elder and Rich County, and we'll also be starting preseason pronghorn classifications. And in years past, they've flown to do some chucker trend counts out of a helicopter, and that's become kind of cost prohibitive. So now they're shifting over to trail cams. So they'll be setting out several trail cams on random guzzlers to get a kind of a trend on chucker use at guzzlers to try to estimate if those populations are up or down. And then finally, in aquatics, they'll be aerial stocking the Uintas this month, and the roadside lakes along the Mirror Lake Highway weekly. And then Andy Adams Reservoir, which is in Kaysville, kind of on the east side of Kaysville, there was an aeration system installed because of water quality and dissolved oxygen concerns. And those aerator systems help circulate the water and hopefully hold the fish longer into the summer months. So that's all I have unless there's questions.
Thank you, Justin. The meeting will proceed as follows. A representative from the Division of Wildlife Resources will make a presentation on the agenda item. Then we will have questions from the public on the presentation. This time is for questions only, not comments. Next, we will have questions from the council on the presentation. Then we will take comments from the public on the agenda item. Persons representing themselves will have 3 minutes to comment. Persons representing organized groups will have 5 minutes to comment. In either case, please fill out a blue comment card if you wish to comment and indicate if you would like to address the council or provide a written comment. At the end of the public comment period, the public portion of the agenda, at the end of the public comment period, the public portion of that agenda item ends and further public participation will only be at the request of the council for clarification. Next, the council will comment on the agenda item. Then the council will make motions recommending action by the Wildlife Board on the agenda, deliberate those motions, and then vote. Council members who wish to abstain from voting will state their conflict, and council members voting in opposition to a motion will provide their reasoning. The meeting will then proceed to the next agenda item until completed. Please limit commenting during the question period. If the council will allow you to call them in turn when speaking, the transcription will be much easier than having to recognize the speaker's voice to identify them. For comment cards with written comments, read the commentators. That's for me. I'm reading these comments to myself, aren't I? This is my first time at this job as well, so bear with me. Again, we just ask if you have comments to please bring the cards up and just, again, to be respectful to each other's opinions. And we will be timing, so I don't like that. They didn't give me a gavel today like they were supposed to, so I guess I haven't earned it yet, but we will be timing you and ask you to please be prompt with the time allowed. All right. Did I forget anything? I think we're there. So as we vote on, once there's been a discussion taking place and the questions, and when there's time for a motion, I will ask those in favor to say aye and raise their hand, and those opposed to say no and raise their hand. If the ayes have it and the motion passes, the noes, and then if they vote against it, we ask them again to explain their conflict or why they voted no. All right. If there's no further business and there's no objection, the meeting at the end will, if there's no further conflict at the end, we'll end the meeting and it'll be adjourned. We're going to go ahead now and begin with our first. Do you have one more thing? I'll give some time to Justin.
Yeah, I just forgot one thing on the regional update. It's more of a statewide update, but the division has started to pre-record our presentations and post them on our website. And so if you go to the Wildlife RAC tab, you can actually watch the presentation several days in advance of when the public meeting occurs. And there will also be an opportunity to provide comment if you're not able to attend the RAC meeting. So I just wanted to pass that along as well.
We will now go to our agenda item number 5, the fur bear and bobcat harvest recommendations for 2019 and 2020. And that'll be given to us by Darren DuBois, the mammals coordinator.
Thank you. I apologize for being late. I had 6:30 in my calendar, and luckily I planned on being a little early, so it worked out. I'll be presenting first tonight our 2019 and 20 bobcat and fur bear recommendations. The bulk of this presentation will be dealing with bobcats. In Utah, we manage bobcats according to the bobcat management plan that's been in place for several years now. That's a plan that was developed using a committee of various stakeholders and interest groups and was passed and adopted by the Wildlife Board. In the plan, there are three management criteria that we look at each year to determine where we are in terms of bobcat populations. And depending on where we fall within those targets, we'll make recommendations for permits, season lengths, and et cetera. So the first management criteria are the number of juveniles in the harvest. Our target for that is between 42 and 56%. If it's higher than 56%, then the plan identifies a maximum management level, which would be 6 permits per individual, no cap on the total number of permits sold, and the maximum amount of season length. If it's below 42%, that indicates a declining population, and so we would, depending on how many other parameters might be out of whack, we would take a look at modifying our harvest strategy.
Darren?
Yes.
Your slides aren't advancing.
Oh, great. I don't even, oh, that's because it's not in slide mode. I assume since it was up there, we're good. Maybe. Is this your computer, Jody? Might be. All right, sorry about that. So this is the slide I just finished with. The target again is between 42 and 56%. We're looking at that slot when we're looking at our data. So this slide is a record of the juveniles in the harvest since 1999. And you can see bobcats follow a fairly typical predator-prey type pattern. They cycle up and down through time. The plan's designed to be sensitive to those cycles. They typically cycle with prey base. So the this year, in 2018-19, we're actually below the 42% objective. And you can see the trend there over the last 3 years. It looks like we've been heading in that direction. The next management criteria is adult survival. That's an analysis, a statistical analysis we do to try to determine, based on our harvest, what general adult survival is in the population. And the target there in the plan is between 65 and 72%. We want that to be high. That indicates reproducing population and an opportunity then for people to take bobcats. So again, if it's above 72, or actually above 65, we're okay. We can provide that maximum opportunity. If it drops below 65, we might be looking at some changes. And here's the data on that. Again, the same time period from 1999 through last year. This is one that was actually outside, or actually below, our management parameters last time we came and talked about this, but this was the only parameter that was outside. It looks like that ticked up a little bit, but it's still outside of our management plan parameters. The third parameter that we look at are the percent of females in the harvest, and this is what we're looking at here is do we have sufficient numbers of females to breed and to reproduce the next generation and provide opportunity? And so we're looking for that to be between 41 and 45%. In this case, we want it to be lower than 41. If it gets to be above 45, that's where we'd be looking at making some changes. And here's the data on that same time period. In this case, we are above that target of 45% from last year. So this is everything summed up in a table. You can see what the numbers have been since 2016, what they are this year. After last season, we are outside of the management plan parameters on all three management objectives. And so what the plan directs us to do is if two are outside of the parameters, we would reduce permits and shorten the season. And if all three are out, then we cap the permits at 80% of last year's total sales. So that's what we're recommending this year. First of all, we're recommending we reduce the number of permits per individual from 6 to 5, that we shorten the season by 1 week, but we'll shorten it on the front end of the season, so it actually starts a week later, and that we cap the number of permits at 80% of last year's sales at 6,460. Again, I think I mentioned this, but we know that bobcat populations fluctuate. The plan is designed to be sensitive to that, and so when they're on a downswing, we'll limit opportunity, and as they come back, we'll look at bringing that opportunity back. So, and we'll keep looking at this each year to see where we are. If the trend continues on some of these parameters, we may need further restrictions next year. So we'll wait and see how that goes. Additional fur bearer recommendations. These are season dates. They're just changed for the calendar year. But beaver and mink season, we're recommending September 21st, 2019 through April 1st, 2020. And for marten badger, gray fox, kit fox, ringtail, spotted skunk, and weasel, September 21st through March 1st. And that's all I have on that.
Thank you, Darren. Now we'll proceed to questions from the public. Again, these are questions and not comments, so if you have any questions for Darren, we ask you to please come up to the mic and ask them at this time. Okay, no questions from the public. Now, time for the council. The council members who have questions for Darren can now ask them. Wow. Okay. So we have no questions. We'll now turn to...
Thank you.
Okay.
If you could go back to some of the graphs, is that cycling on about a 7 to 10 year cycle?
It looks like it, yeah. Yeah, I think the most telling one is probably the juveniles in the harvest. That'd be an indication of reproduction and how much is going on, and it just seems to cycle. And this corresponds to what we've seen with rabbit numbers. Justin talked just a minute ago about how our folks are getting ready to do rabbit routes, and you can see those prey populations decline, and then the predator populations tend to fall, especially bobcats. So that seems to be all what's going on for the most part.
I have one more question. For the kit fox, which is a BLM sensitive species, when was the last time DWR did monitoring?
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know that we've done much monitoring.
Other than
lately.
On Dugway?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? All right. We'll now go to comments from the public, and we have some cards here. First person on will be Cody Bassett.
Hi, I'm Cody Bassett. I'm with the Utah Trappers Association. I'm the vice president. Can you hear? Okay. Well, anyways, I support, or Utah Trappers, they support the bobcat management plan and the recommendations that have been presented tonight.
Thank you. All right. Next would be Sierra Nelson.
I'm with the Utah Wool Growers Association, and we just want to support the recommendations of the division. thank you very much for your efforts.
So we have a comment card here from Jake Reese. I'm not sure, it didn't say, is there one item or which one you wanted to comment on? Is Jake here? Yeah, it just doesn't, which item, was it on this or on the line? On the other one? Okay, that's the question. Thank you. Okay, are there any other comment cards or anyone? Okay, we'll now turn the time over for the council for questions. Any questions? Comments, not question. Comments from the council. Any?
In regard to Beaver, just want to note that the BLM has been partnering with UDWR to manage habitat and the Beaver Dam analogs, and that we'll defer to UDWR for management of the populations, and along with Kit Fox.
All right. Any other comments and or motions? Kevin?
I would make a motion that we accept the plan and the recommendations as presented.
Everybody?
I'll second that.
Okay. So we have a motion to accept as presented by Kevin McLeod and a second by Aaron Johnson. Right, with that, we'll go ahead this time and vote on that motion on this. So all those in favor of accepting the proposal as presented, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Is that unanimous? I don't see any. So so the motion passes unanimously. We will now turn the time back over to Darren to now go over the Cougar recommendation, item number 6 on the agenda.
Okay, here we go. That's just like lull me into a false sense of security. All right, I'll be presenting our 2019 and 20 Cougar recommendations next. First of all, quickly, I wanted to summarize how we manage cougars in the state and just quickly touch on the plan. So similar to the Bobcat plan, we have a Utah Cougar Management Plan that was initiated in 2015. We've had plans before that, but this current one began in 2015, and it runs through 2025. That plan was a product of the Cougar Advisory Group, which again included livestock producers, non-consumptive users, big game hunters, houndsmen, scientists, experts in the field. So the task of that committee was to come up with a consensus plan to manage cougars in the state, and that's what the plan is a product of. That was adopted then by the board in 2015. The goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy cougar population within current distribution while considering human safety, economic concerns, other wildlife species, and maintaining hunting traditions. And we define a healthy cougar population as one with a reasonable proportion of older age animals, breeding females, healthy individuals, in balance with natural prey and genetic variability. So how do we do all of those things? There are two parameters in the Cougar Management Plan that we look at. One, first of all, we average the harvest data that we receive over 3 years. So we're always looking at a three-year time period summarized. The reason we do that is because things can change quite a bit year to year. So we're trying to spread that out over time. It also gives us a little bit of extra sample size when we're looking at areas with low sample numbers annually. The first parameter we look at are the percent of females in the harvest. And depending on whether the unit is being managed because we've got concerns about prey populations declining or not, we're shooting for either below or above 40%. And as we get into this, I'll show you how the different units fall into these different categories. So if a unit is not under predator management, we don't have any concerns about natural prey, we're trying to make sure that the percent females in the harvest remains below 40%. The second thing we look at are the percent of adults 5 years and older in the harvest, and the intent there is to maintain that older age class of animals in the population, again, outside of a predator management action. There are different ways, hunt strategies that we use. The first is a limited entry strategy. So when you see LE in the presentation, that refers to limited entry. That's where a certain number of permits are issued into the public draw. People can put in for those permits, and then if they draw them, they can hunt the unit during the season. If they fill all the tags, the hunt is over. If they don't fill the tags and the season ends, the hunt is over for that unit. I'm going to jump one. The second kind of hunt that we offer is a harvest objective unit hunt, and these are quota hunt units. So the biologist will set a quota during the hunting season. If the unit reaches, say we have 10, if we harvest 10 mountain lions on that unit, then that unit would close to hunting. If they don't hit the quota, then it just ends at the end of the season. And then the split units are a combination of the two. They begin as limited entry units with a set number of people that can hunt. Beginning near the end of February, if there are any permits that haven't been filled, the hunt then opens up as a quota for whatever number of permits are left. So if there were 10, they filled 8, there'd be 2 left. That then would remain open until those 2 final lions were taken. We also have the opportunity in the state for people to pursue lions. During this, it's an overlapping season, but people can pursue with their dogs. If they tree a lion, they have to release it unharmed immediately. I want to talk just a little bit about our predator management plans and when those might enter into the mix, because that's an important consideration. This is straight from our rule. When big game herds are below objective and cougar predation is considered a potential limiting factor for herd growth and recovery, predator management plans may be considered according to our policy. Under a predator management plan, the primary target for percent females in the harvest over the 3-year time period is above 40%. So you'll see that reflected in our recommendations. This relates specifically to mule deer populations and bighorn sheep populations. Predator management plans are begun and sunset on a 3-year time frame, and so we set up the plan, we recommend the action, we put criteria for how we're going to evaluate whether or not it's effective or not, and at the end of 3 years that would be evaluated, and we can determine if it worked or if it didn't work and how we would move forward. Oops. So let's look at some of our data. First of all, this is a graph that shows the mule deer population trend since 2004, which is the orange line, and the cougar population, which is the red line. And I think the takeaway here is to pay most attention to trend. You can see that the different y-axis on the right is mule deer, on the left is cougars. So that's their different scales there. But the takeaway here is that when we grow mule deer, we tend to grow mountain lions. So as those food sources increase and resources on the landscape increase, cougars take advantage of that and populations grow. So the trend since 2004 has been up, similar to what our mule deer numbers have done. This graph is the amount of hunter take and then other mortality since 2009, so for the last decade. The orange line on the top is total mortality, so that would include hunt mortality and then any other lions that would be turned into us found dead. Typically, most of these are going to be lions that have been in depredation situations where they're taking livestock. But this also includes roadkill, poaching, Anytime we get our hands on a lion that's dead, other than one that a hunter took, that would be included there. So that we just have both of those, and you can see the trend there over time for 10 years. We talked a little bit about that proportion of females in the harvest objective. So this is statewide representation of how that's kind of gone over many years since 1990. The dotted black line is the threshold. That's that 40% threshold we're shooting for. And on a statewide basis, we want to maintain, you know, we want to be at or below that threshold. We peaked up above it in the late 90s and early 2000s. And you can see there's some decline lately, but we've also, the last couple of years, that's actually been increasing. So just quickly, I'll summarize what we're going to talk about tonight, and then we'll go through it in a little bit more detail. First of all, I want to present, this is going to be a little different than we've done in the past. We used to go region by region and unit by unit. And I think that gets confusing. The plan is a little bit complicated. So what I've done is I've categorized units depending on how they fall within the management plan guidelines, and also what the range of management decisions that would be allowed under the plan. So I hope that'll help make things a little bit more clear and help you make a decision tonight. Secondly, overall, we're recommending an increase in our permits and quota of 34 total permits from last year. We are also, similar to what we did with black bear, we're going to recommend that we go to a 3-year recommendation cycle, and I'll explain why we want to do that later in the presentation. And then finally, we've got just a couple of rule changes, so we'll hit those at the end. So moving on to these categories. The first category here, these are units that have predator management plans in place. So we're managing, we're trying to manage for lower cougar densities, either because of concerns we have with bighorn sheep or with mule deer. And the objective is to maintain harvest above 40%, maintain 40% females in the harvest over the last 3 years. In that case, the plan says if you're there, and these units are, you should maintain the current number of permits. So that's what we're doing. We're recommending no change to these units. There is one change in the hunt strategy on the Ogden. We're recommending that be switched to harvest objective. I believe that was a split unit. I had a note, but it's not there. So correct me if I'm wrong, Jim. Yeah, I see nods. Okay, that's what I thought. The next category, these are units that don't have a predator management plan in place. They don't qualify, and they're females in the harvest, percent females in the harvest is above the management objective of 40%. The only option in the plan for units that fall into this category is a decrease in permits. And so you see in yellow there that we are recommending decreases on all three of those units. The next category, again, these are units that are under predator management, but in this case, they're not hitting that 40% threshold. They should be above that, and they're not there. And so the plan indicates in those cases, we can look at the data and the trend, and we can either maintain permits or increase permits. In all cases except the Book Cliffs here, we're recommending increases. The Book Cliffs is actually struggling to hit that quota. They didn't hit it last year, and so we're not recommending any increase. But they're at 39%, so they're pretty close as it is. But if you're not hitting your current permit numbers, then we'll wait and hold and see how that goes. This is the same category, just additional units. So on these units, we're recommending an increase on the Wasatch Aveniquin Wildcat unit. And the rest they're maintaining. We can go through these in detail, but most of the reason, if they didn't increase here, it's because that quota question. They're not harvesting the number of animals that they currently have quotas for, and so we'll hold off, and once they can hit that, we may look at increases. That's crazy. The next category, these are units that meet the female objective, so they're under 40% females in the harvest, but this is where the age objective enters in. And so they're okay on the female side, but they're actually underperforming on the percent of adults. We want that to be between 15 and 20%. And so in these, two of these units are actually new units this year. They're actually an old unit that used to be combined. We're recommending that we take those units and split them apart. We've got some real concerns on the Chalk Creek with livestock depredation impacts to producers. And so we're recommending to take that unit on its own, 15 permits, and switch it to harvest objective from limited entry, and then leave the Camas as a separate unit with 5 permits and limited entry hunt strategy. The other three units here, the options are maintain or decrease, and two of them they're maintaining, the Fish Lake they're recommending a decrease. The next category, these are units that meet both the female and age objectives, and in these cases the plan leaves it up to the biologist's discretion, so they can increase or decrease or maintain depending on what they're seeing in their data and what their trends are and other considerations on the mountain. And so in this case, Central Mountain Southwest Manti, we're recommending a decrease of 3 permits and changing it to a limited entry strategy. The Pine Valley South, they're recommending an increase from 12 to 13. This category, these are units that meet the female objective but exceed the age category. So they're units where they're taking more than 20% adults 5 years or older. And in these cases, their options, the option in the plan is to maintain or increase permits. Beaver East, we're recommending an increase from 10 to 15. On the Central Mountain Southeast Manti, we're recommending an increase from 20 to 22. On the Pine Valley North, from 14 to 16. On the Zion, from 23 to 26. And then East Canyon, changing the hunt strategy there from harvest objective to split. Is that right? Limited entry to split. Then we have a category where we just don't harvest a lot of lions. And so the sample sizes are so small that the numbers really, really don't mean much. And so for this graph, I have indicated whether or not there's a predator management plan in place on these units, and so that's just yes or no. And you can see what the permits were last year. The only change here is on the Beaver West. This is the Mineral Mountains that I'm sure you're all familiar with. We're planning on doing a bighorn sheep transplant out there, and so we want to increase the quota for mountain lions to get that sheep population going. We want to try not to have a lot of predation on those new animals as they hit the ground. The final category here is there are 4 units in the state that have an unlimited amount of take that can come off of those units. These are primarily desert units where the prey base is bighorn sheep only. There aren't any other big ungulates available, and so lions can do a lot of damage in a short amount of time. They also have very low lion densities because the resources aren't there. And so I thought just because this sounds like it's kind of open up the floodgates and it's going to be a bloodbath, I put the last 2 years of harvest on those units just so you kind of know what people take. So on the Bookcliffs, they've taken 1 lion over the last couple of years. The biggest one's the Kaparowitz, they've taken 5, and most of them were last year. And San Juan and San Rafael, again, just 1, and that's fairly typical. They just, every once in a while, they'll take a lion, but they don't. The densities are low, they don't take very many. So an unlimited strategy is safe out there for that. Another thing that we get asked and people are interested in is how many harvest objective or quota units do we have compared to the number of limited entry or split units, and this just kind of divides it and shows you how That's changed since 2015, so it's up a little bit. We've got a little bit more limit entry and split opportunities than we did in 2018. So the three-year management cycle. One of the things that is important with predator management, especially an elusive, difficult animal to quantify, is to try to maintain some consistency in our management strategy so that we can look at these harvest numbers and be confident that our estimates are correct, or as correct as they can be. And one of the things, you know, I showed you the population model earlier and the trend, and that's adults. One thing that can confound that method is if you're raising permits at the same time that you're trying to estimate what the population is doing. And so that's one reason why we're recommending that, like we did with black bears, that we go to we recommend permits, we go for 3 years, we evaluate based on the last 3 years of data, which is what we are doing now. That allows predator management plans to run their full 3 years and not have a whole lot of change on the unit. And that will help us, I think, get a better idea of what's going out on the landscape. Now, having said that, we feel like it's important to have a safety valve in the system. And so if we detect during that 3 years some emergency situation with either the prey base or the lion numbers where we would need to make a change, we'd recommend that we be able to bring that again back to the racks and the board and have them make a recommendation, a decision on that. So we'd be watching. I think for black bears, the board still would like us to do this annual report, so we're kind of telling everybody what we're seeing and what's going on, so we'd still do that. But the goal would be to maintain permit numbers for 3 year cycles. Season dates. These are all, with one exception, these are all the same except adjusted for calendar year as they were last year. So for limited entry, November 6th, 2019 through May 31st, 2020. For the split, the limited entry portion will be November 6th through February 23rd, 2020, and then would switch over to harvest objective from February 29th through May 31st, except on the Poncegont, where it would open and remain open all year. Poncegont's a very difficult unit to hunt. They rarely, I think, they have a quota of 10, and I think they harvested one mountain lion last year. So we're trying to make people hunt that and give them a big window to do it in. Harvest objective would be November 6, 2019 through November 3rd, 2020. And on the LaSalle's in San Juan, we currently have a restriction during the archery elk season for dogs, for bears. And so we thought we'd probably better be consistent and just so someone can't go out with their dogs and say, I'm chasing lions. Just not that anyone would do that. But we're recommending that we close those units to dogs from the 14th to the 22nd of September. And finally, pursuit season would be November 6th through May 31st. Moving on to livestock depredation. This is a big concern that we have and that we share with producers. So I wanted to take a minute just to focus on some of this. This can be a real driver, and it's a really tough problem to address. Mountain lions are carnivores. They have to eat meat to survive, and so we do sometimes often get conflicts with livestock producers on the mountain. So this is our trend over several years since 2001 until through last year. The orange or yellow or whatever color you can see up there line are the number of incidences of cougar depredation. So an incident would be a producer finds a dead animal, usually their lambs or ewes, typically their sheep, but sometimes cattle or goats. They call Wildlife Services. Wildlife Services then confirms that, yep, it's a lion, it's the one that killed it. That's an incident, and that can that can continue on through the summer, but that's how we count it. So it's apples to apples through time, but that's what an incident would be defined as. You can see we had a big peak in the early 2000s. It kind of dropped off. Small peak in the around 2012, and then things dropped off, but they've been increasing since 2015. The rate of increase has slowed, but it's continued on. The blue line here are the number of mountain lions that have been taken by wildlife services that have been involved in these incidences. So you can kind of get a feel for how many lions have to be removed from those situations. That seems to have flattened out a little bit, but it tends to follow the overall pattern. This is a chart that shows the value of losses over time. The Division of Wildlife Resources has a fund, and we will compensate producers the full value of the losses up to the budget limit. But we also calculate what the actual losses are, and these are for confirmed kills. So these are ones that have been a wildlife services agent has gone out on the ground and confirmed as a lion kill. This doesn't include losses that aren't detected or confirmed. But you can see the trend there and some of those values. There's a little bit of noise in this and that. You know, sheep and livestock values change over time. But the general trend lately has been up. One thing that we've done this year, the last 2 years we've had to prorate, so we've hit our budget limit. And when we do that, we have to reduce payments to everybody. And we've actually increased that budget from $180,000 to $300,000 to make sure that we're paying the full amount, at least of the confirmed kills, every year. Some options that livestock producers have. In the event that they have a mountain lion in their livestock, they've taken some animals, they have 72 hours to try to remove that mountain lion when the situation is active. And they can do that themselves. They can have wildlife services come and assist. But they just need to, if they do catch and remove a lion, they need to report it to us within 72 hours. And then we'll log it. And that's that category we talked about before where other mortality other than sport harvest, that's where those would be accounted for. We also have the option for producers to obtain depredation permits if they've got chronic losses year after year. And you can work with your local region and your local biologist to get those permits issued. That allows a producer to try to capture and remove a problem lion outside of the time they've actually got livestock on the ground. So it gives a little bit of flexibility to do some control. I mentioned Wildlife Services several times. They're always available to assist. And then the compensation again. We will compensate for confirmed losses, both from lions and bears. Finally, the rule changes we're recommending tonight. The first one is just really bookkeeping, but it's to change the legal weapons section in the rule to reflect what we did with the big game rule. So this is primarily the air bow. Allowing air bows. Anyway, the intent here is just that legal weapons for big game are legal weapons for bears are legal weapons for lions. So that's basically mainly just housekeeping. And the second thing we're asking is that when people bring their lions in to be checked in, and every hunter has to check the animal in with us, that they provide us with the GPS or the actual location. Doesn't necessarily have to be GPS, but they do have to provide the location of the kill to us. And what we'd like to do is start building a reference to where animals are actually being taken on the landscape. We feel like that'll be a really good tool to inform our management moving forward. If there's concentrations, we can design hunts around that, maybe even get some idea of what's going on with the population and where the sinks are and where the sources may be. So a couple of fun things. We've been working with Utah State and the National Wildlife Research Center up in Logan to look at cougars in the state. We've got collared animals on the cache, on the manti, and on the book cliffs. And it's still early days. We just started this December. But a couple of cool things that I wanted to report back, because we've talked about this in the past. The first one here is this is a lion that was captured on the east side of Bear Lake. I don't know if you can see the little brown. You'll see it when it moves. It's not going to work because I'm in kind of weird mode here. Here we go. She was captured in December on the east side of Bear Lake and quickly moved into Blacksmith Fork, just below Hardware. And she spent the winter there. She's actually recollared in that canyon. And then she got up and decided to check things out. That's I-80. She kind of parallels. She's on the Uintas. And several weeks ago, she was all the way down to the south of the Uintas within the state. So this is one lion. Most of our collared lions have territories and stay local, but sometimes they're capable of very big movements. Some of you have probably already seen this. One of the things we're looking at is behavior at kill sites. We're really interested in how long the lions stay, what kind of behavior they have. And so our PhD student actually watches the movements. When she detects a cluster, she goes out and investigates what the lion possibly has preyed upon. In this case, it was a cached deer. So that pile of sticks she's piled up. So this is like just after 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh, it's not? Dang. That'll probably be a relief to some people. Can I see the? Well, it'll just might just have to be a suspense. Dang. Anyway, we posted it on our website.
I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah. So if you've seen it, then. Great. If not, I'll show it to you afterwards. I'm sorry. It just doesn't seem to be working. But it's very interesting to see. In this case, the lion has this cache here. The next night, the cache is visited by a bear. And the bear has a little bit of a snack on the lion's kill. And then the lion returns. And then the bear comes back. And so, again, this is just one incident. But it's really cool, some of the stuff that we're learning about behaviors at these. And early days. So this is just more gee whiz than anything, but kind of a neat thing. So check our Instagram if you want to watch that video. Now it won't advance. Anyway, that's it. That's all I've got. So there we go. Oh, I don't know what's up. We're all done. I'm done. Yep, that's it.
Oh.
Well done. Yeah.
Wake up.
Sorry.
No, I'm
sorry. Put everybody to sleep.
No, you didn't. I was waiting for the bear to come.
That right. Sorry about that. I might get it working. I'll
quiet.
Show it to you. But
we're very
sorry.
Quiet. We didn't
it's
want to spook them.
It's kind of anticlimactic.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Darren, for your what would you call that? Your presentation. And now we will go. Turn the time over to the public for some questions that they might have. And again, these are for questions and not comments. Is there any questions from the public at this time? Remember to...
I think a loud request go for it. That
It still won't come out in the microphone.
GPS with the rule change, that's going to be on everything across the board or just the hunt ones?
Right now it's the ones we check in. We are working with Wildlife Services on some of the other stuff. But
yeah, it's more data is more data.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Questions. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Any other questions from the public? Please state your name also.
Calvin
Duncan. Oh, closer.
Calvin Duncan. Have you had the chance to pull DNA from each of these cats across the state when they're killed?
We've done that in the past. We don't do it right now. So I guess that's the answer. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Curious. Kenneth Duncan, Morgan, Utah. Kenneth Duncan, Morgan, Utah. I was wondering if you have the ages of the cougars that was killed in East Canyon this year and last year.
Yeah. Let's see. Might have to dig into year by year, but East Canyon, the three-year average, sorry, that's the wrong. Average age was 4, so the last 3 years combined was 4 years.
Are they, you don't have a breakdown of what
I do. I can get it for you. Maybe I can look that up while we have some other questions and,
okay.
And comments.
Kevin Norman. Hey, Darren, would you consider the cash deer herd stable, declining, or increasing?
Maybe we ought to let Jim answer that. we'll go straight to the biologist.
Jim Christensen, cache district biologist. So the cache deer herd is fluctuating. So for the purposes of the predator management plan, we go, our deer survival is on a December to December basis, and so we're using 3 winters ago data. So that was a good mild winter. Then we had the bad winter 2 years ago, and then a mild winter again. And so this past winter was another bad winter. And so with the mild winters, we have really good survival, we have really good production, and so we increase following the bad winter. Boy, we grew almost 3,000 deer, 4,000 deer on the cache unit. And then with this past winter, we're going to see a huge decline again, but we still have adult survival to calculate throughout the rest of this year to December. So we are, overall, we are slightly trending down now, but a good mild winter will shoot right back up. The cache is very productive on a good mild winter. If we get good moisture through the summer, this year we should be getting good health assessments when we look at the deer in December. The range is looking fantastic right now. To say it's the 1st of August, it looks like the 1st of June up in the high country right now. So we should be seeing higher survival through this winter that's going to be coming up.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, the cache kind of performs like a typical northern unit where you get these fluctuations over time just because the winters can be hard. Just quickly, on the East Canyon, the last 3 years, so in 2007, 2016, the average age, I can see this right, we'll go with 17. 2017, 3.8. 2018, 3.1. 2019, 4.0.
Any other questions from the public?
Dennis Simonson, Northern Utah. I guess this is probably for Jim, going off that. Does the harshness of the winter affect the amount of lion kills? Does that go up or down with the winter?
I think to the extent that that lions are more accessible and can be, and tracks can be, is that what you mean? Or you mean the kill on the deer?
Lion kill on the deer.
Yeah, that's a difficult one to ask. I don't know if we have really good data on. We know when they kill a collared animal. And Jim, how many, did you have a lot of lion? I know you had some lion kill on adult does. Do you have a feel for that on your collared deer?
Christensen. So with our collared deer, we usually end up with two or three collared deer that are killed by cougars every year. Same way with our fawn survival study. Right now, we've got that. We collared 50 fawns this spring. Of 17 mortalities to this point, only two of those were attributed to cougars.
Scott Reese from Morgan, Utah. The lion that was collared and the range of area that she covered, is this typical?
No, we've got about 13 lions on the air right now. Two of them have made these big movements, but most of them actually are staying fairly close and on an established home range. So it's an anomaly, but they definitely are capable of those movements if for whatever reason. Yeah.
So we have a lion problem. We don't know if it's one of these wide-ranging lions or if it's a local population.
Right. Typically you have kind of this established local territory. This is sort of how it works. And then you have these transients that are kind of always wandering. And if they can find a suitable place to be, they'll set up shop. And so I think we've managed to capture one of the transient ones. And we're also seeing most of them are those local lions. So yeah, I guess it depends. You're more likely to take the lion that's local because they're going to still be there if you're trying to address a problem.
Is there a sex difference on who does the traveling?
Typically the males are the ones that do. So it is a little bit unusual to see a female do that, but they certainly do. Yeah.
Do you have any information or data regarding the population of your fur bearers in relation to the population of your cougars? And the reason I ask that question is we have a lot of trail cameras in a lot of areas in a 10,000 acre place where we used to see bobcats. Mm-hmm. Now all we see are lions.
Yeah, I think when we looked at that bobcat data, clearly there's been a decline in the bobcat population. I don't think it's related to lions. I think it's primarily related just to that underlying prey base has declined. And so that's why we're recommending some of the cuts we are to those permits. So,
you cut back the fur bearers, or you increase the lions?
We did a little bit of both. There's some units we decreased, or stayed the same, and some others that we increased. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mark Thompson. On the cache, referring to it, it seems there's been several more sightings by communities along the cache. In your study, do you take that into consideration? I mean, it's even my backyard. I'm on the border of the cache, and then communities are really close by. Do you consider the safety of those communities at all in your numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. We take that into consideration. I think the reason There was a bit of a spike in sightings this last winter. I think it had a lot to do with the dense snow pack that we had. So the lions will follow those deer down. But the ones that we had collared didn't really do that. They stayed on the mountain and made a living up there. So I guess it kind of depends. The other pattern we see in lions that show up in town is they tend to be those dispersing juveniles. Most of the time they're males. They're the ones that are making those movements and trying to find a place to be. Yeah, if we get a call, we'll come and investigate and we'll try to remove that lion if it's a human safety concern.
So maybe I didn't clarify that. So do you consider that an increase in numbers or a decrease in numbers?
In terms of permits or in terms of lion numbers?
Lions.
Yeah, that I think it probably indicates a growing population when you have a lot of dispersing young showing up in places where they typically don't show up. It's not probably the only thing you'd look at, but certainly one of the things in a mix of parameters, including depredation, a population reconstruction. But yeah, that's something that might indicate a growing population. And that's what we think's been happening over the last 5 to 8 years is lion numbers have grown.
Any more questions from the public? Those were great questions. We'll now turn the time to the RAC now for questions they might have.
Darren, I have some questions you might have guessed.
Sure.
The chronic depredation permits that are issued to ranchers, are those counted in the mortality data when you're adjusting the tag permits?
No, those are almost on two paths. Typically, there aren't a lot of lion. You can see the difference between sport harvest and these would be among those others. It's typically not a lot of animals. Those are also limited in geographic space. And so the intent there is if there's a lion that's killing somebody's sheep, then that's the lion that we need to address. And it's not, you know, it's not an effort to do population level management. That would be more on the sport side if we're concerned about overall numbers. Having said that, it's complicated, but we don't take those additional, those aren't factored into the percent females in the harvest. So the adjustment to permits has to do with sport. The depredation side is more of a pragmatic way to solve some problems and help producers that have concerns.
On the 3 year cycle thing that you proposed, mm-hmm. And I think we kind of want it to match up with the bears,
right?
We talked in the years past. If we accept that recommendation and it goes to a 3 year cycle, would you change, hunt strategies, harvest objective split, or would everything stay in the plan the same for 3 years?
That would be the objective, is to stay the same, unless there's some compelling reason, some biological concern, we want to leave it the same. We feel like that's the best way to evaluate what's going on with the population.
So the proclamation would, in essence, the numbers and the hunt strategy would be the same for 3 years, and then you'd take a look on whether you needed to move
right
to split, limited entry, up or down.
Right, yeah.
Hunt strategies and season dates and that. I mean,
right.
Adjusting for calendars.
Yeah.
And that would mirror the bears.
Exactly, yeah. So okay. We do with bears.
In the lion plan, it talks about, and I think I brought this up last year, that the division would explore ways to educate the public on the true effects of lions on deer.
Right.
Commend you for the studies that are done. Is there any more information on that? I mean, we hear rumors of how many deer a lion kills. Do
right,
you have
right.
any knowledge or studies that,
one
you can
of, that's
share
one
with
of the, so the literature, I think if you distilled it and you had to go by a rule of thumb, it's the literature right now indicates about one deer a week, one adult deer a week. But, you know, that varies a lot depending on whether the lion has kittens or it's a male or a female or if it's eating other prey. But that's sort of the rule of thumb. I think we're already, and we're going to get some really good information from these collared lions because, as I mentioned before, Kristen, our PhD student, is going out and discovering exactly. She's finding things like rabbits, actually a hare, So she's finding small stuff. So we're going to get a really good feel for what lions eat throughout the year. And I'm sure it's going to vary depending on the individual as well. So it's a little bit rambling, but hopefully...
No. The reason I asked that question is, I think there's a huge concern with sportsmen and everybody that the lions are eating their deer and whatnot. And so I kind of want to get an idea. I mean, I know that it may differ area, but just to say that a lion eats a deer a week, I mean, what studies... Because if that's the average, then there's lions eating a deer every day.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then there's lions eat one deer a year, and you get an average of a week. So what are these studies that we can say it's one a week?
Or is that just a rumor, pulling everything together, and that's kind of become the consensus based on... It's all based on different studies throughout the states, and it like I said, there's a lot of variance in that. So you're kind of talking about an average. But there's a lot of variance, as you mentioned. The other thing too, though, that reminds me, we've got a lot better data on our deer and elk now with these collared animals, and we know what their primary causes of mortality are too. And so, what we're planning to do now, this is all data we didn't have before, is try to marry up our predator populations with our prey populations and make those plans mesh so that if predation is limiting, we can tell that from our mortality of collared animals with a lot more precision than we've been able to in the past. So I'm helping on the mule deer committee. They're looking at a statewide plan right now. We're going to be having those discussions, and then when we take another look at the cougar plan, we'll want to do that too. So
just a couple more quick questions. Are there any bounties on lions in the state of Utah?
I think there might be some counties that offer, but I don't know for sure. I've heard that there are some counties that are offering.
Is that legal?
As
a protected
far as I know,
species, yeah, to pay a bounty on it. Not a coyote, a
right,
protected species.
Yeah. As far as I know, it is. You have to check with Marty, but as far as I know.
I think that we ought to check in.
Yeah,
it?
I can ask.
And then,
I don't know for sure either. Just to be clear, there's a rumor, but I don't know for sure.
The methods of taking lion, you have to kill it with a centerfire rifle. I think that's one of the changes to mirror the big game.
Yeah.
Other than that, is it sky's the limit? Like, you could spot stock it, you could use it with hounds, you could, bait it if you wanted to. Could you shoot one out of a helicopter or a...
No. All it's changing is the legal weapon types, not methods. So
aerial gunning of a protected species, a lion or a bear, is against the law?
Right. Yeah.
In all cases?
Right.
I think you touched a little bit on this, but in the studies I've read and that we've talked about over the years, predator management is one of the least productive ways to regulate ungulate populations. Is that a fair statement? There's better ways, like habitat management.
In order for predator management to be effective, there has to be room and resources for that population to grow, for the prey population to grow. That's typically how it works. And so in order to put a predator management plan in place, we need to determine that that's the case. So if a prey population was at carrying capacity, and we see that in the collar data, then you're right, yeah, predator management is probably not an effective tool. You probably have to be looking at habitat or some other means. And that's some of the discussions that we have as part of the mule deer plan.
Okay. Thanks. I'll say this for comments, but thank you for the GPS thing. That's
sure,
something we've
yeah,
argued for years.
I believe Randy had a question, or was that involved in his?
Yeah, no, it was more curiosity, just to know where it came from. You had, and I forget the names that are happening, but you had two new hunts.
Yes.
That you'd listed on there.
The Chalk Creek and the Camas, yeah.
Is that a single hunt that was split apart?
Right.
Okay. So with the numbers that you had on there for permits now, how was that compared to what was there?
There were 12 total permits on that unit on that combined unit, and so the total for both units this year would be 20. So, and that's primarily with focus on the Chalk Creek and the concerns we've got on that unit in particular. Okay. So it is an increase from last year, but it is within the plan's parameters.
Okay. One last question, because I'm assuming it's an area of concern with some people that are here. The question came out about the health of the deer herd in Cache. Mm-hmm. What about the health of the lion population?
The lion population? Yeah, I mean, they ask David. There definitely are some lions there. The ones that we've had our hands on are healthy, and they're definitely making a living out there. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Go over again the justification of the decrease of 3 permits on the cash, would you please?
Yeah, in order to maintain or increase permits, that unit would have to be meeting its management plan parameters, and it's exceeding the females in the harvest, and it doesn't currently qualify for predator management. It's been stable over time, and so the only option that Jim had on that was to decrease permits according to the plan, so that's why we're doing that.
I don't think the cats read the book, but...
No, I know.
I get it.
Yeah, they don't read too good.
Now, one other question. How do I be careful with this? Why are we relocating these cats that are caught in urban areas to small rural areas and also, let alone the fact we're dumping them in the middle of livestock operations?
Right,
but
yeah.
Forget that. Why are we relocating them close to small rural areas?
We try to release them in remote areas, and we do take into consideration, you know, what kind of livestock will be in the area. But if they haven't been in trouble, they're just in the wrong place, we'll move them. But we do take those things into consideration. We certainly don't want to move a cat and make it a problem somewhere else. And if it's hanging out in town, we don't want to put it close to another town. So we try to do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Darren, on your slides, on the one you did show the number of lions that were killed in certain units, and then on others you didn't. Is there a reason for that? I know I would ask if you would do that, and if you make those numbers available to the RAC, so it makes it easier to make an informed decision. Okay. If I know that this is a limited entry area, or if this is a quota, if we're meeting quotas or what's happening with them.
Yeah, we can do that in the future. And I could send that. If you're curious about a particular unit, I can pull that up.
Darren, two quick questions if I can. You, in the years past, I found it fascinating where you've been able to go back and look at the age class of lions and then give us a guesstimate of a basic minimum lion population on a specific year. So you can kind of say, well, at a minimum, we have this many lions in the state. Just rough guess, and I'm not holding, but what would be your guesstimate, a rough minimum number of lions in the state?
Let me see if I can pull this up, because things...
Because I didn't see it on this year's.
Things are acting...
And that's
strange.
You've just used mathematics to come up with that number.
I don't think it's going to work. That was the graph I showed you with the deer numbers.
And remember how you'd like say, if we have a lion that's 8 years old and it was alive 8 years ago, and you could kind of, it's a mathematical equation.
Right, so I'll go through that. So the graph I showed where it showed the deer trend and the lion number trend, that's based on a population reconstruction. And so the way that works is if you take a lion on a unit that's 5 years old, you assume that he was 4 years old and he was on the unit the year before, and then you add him together with the lions that were 3 years old the year before. You're kind of back calculating through time. So that gives you an absolute base minimum, because these are actual lions that come into our offices. So we know they were alive, we know they exist, and you go back. You can only do that so far forward in time, because you start running out of older age classes, and so it's always a couple years old. You're always looking back. The other thing we do is we collapse that down so that anything that's 2 years old or older would be the estimate. And so it's an absolute minimum. It doesn't take into account natural mortality. You know, if lions die trying to take down an elk or something like that, none of that's factored in. It's all sport harvest or, you know, animals that come and are checked into us for one reason or another. So that gives you an absolute minimum. So I hesitate to, because of that, you know, the numbers are going to be...
It's a guesstimate.
It's a guess, but the trend remains consistent. So even as that natural mortality kicks in, your graph just kind of scoots up the line in terms of numbers. So
Do you remember what those numbers were approximately?
I think last year we saw, this year I think we're about 2,500 2-year-olds and older in the state. Absolute minimum.
Absolute minimum, 2,500.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what the deer population is?
I mean,
I know it's a rough guess. That's...
It's, sorry, I wish these slides would come back up. I could show it to you.
And if someone else on the board
it's,
knows.
Looks like it's about 375,000, roughly.
Thanks, Darren.
Yep.
Any other questions from the rack? Okay, thank you. We'll now turn the time over to for comments from the public. If you haven't brought your card up, I'd ask you please do it at this time. We have quite a few of them, so let's get to it. We'll start with Sierra Nelson, please.
First of all, I want to thank you for letting me go first so I can go home when I'm done. You guys might be here a while. I'm Sierra Nelson. I'm with the Utah Wool Growers Association, and we would like to thank the division for their work that they've done so far. We really are encouraged by the studies that they've been doing with their grad students, and we would like to go ahead and support the recommendations of the division on this item. As you know, we have a lot of issues just because prey, predator goes on together, but we really feel like this relationship has been good and they've been listening to us. We're always asking for more help. Obviously, we'd still like to see the numbers of harvest go up because we can always use more help. But we appreciate what the division's been doing and we'd like to support them. So thank you much.
Thank you. We'll now go to hopefully Tyler's awake. I know he has a newborn baby at home. Tyler Farr.
Okay, I'm Tyler Farr, representing the Utah Houndsman Association today. We have a letter and a few items that we'd like to address. Can you hear me? Sorry. Okay, so the first item that we'd like to see is UHA does not support the two-tag increase on the Central Mountains Southeast Manti unit. We propose that the tag increases to zero, that stays at where it's at now. And then the next item is the UHA does not support the change from the split to the limited entry on the Central Mountains Southwest Manti unit. Our purpose of this is leaving the Southwest Manti as a split unit. Combined, the two South Manti units have experienced a 100% increase in the tag allocations since the 2015-2016 season. What was once a premier cougar unit in Utah failed to meet harvest last year on the best snow conditions in memory. The same cougars frequent both units and often cross one to the other. As an association, we feel is a counterproductive to have one unit as a split unit and the other unit a limited entry unit. As you are hunting essentially the same lions, by leaving the Southwest unit as a split, it will increase the harvest potential, helping the DWR meet their quotas. Next, the UHA supports the three-year review recommendation with the exception of the Oker Stansberry East unit. And our reason for that is one of the eight cougars harvested this year was an extremely old female and 9 years old, which that's very rare. If it wasn't for that one lion, the division recommendations fall within the current management plan, and it would decrease the tags for this coming year for two. And so with the plan, we'd like to see the recommendation that on a normal year without that freak old lion, it would have dropped the numbers to six instead of eight. And then last, our last kind of thing that we recommend with the cougar management plan that's coming up, UHA is aware that the management plan will be reopened this year to add predator management units. UHA asks for the following change to be made while the plan is open. We ask to change the decision criteria in the management plan for the limited entry lion units only. These changes on the decision criteria would include female percentage killed dropped from 40 to 20%, and the percentage of 5+ year old lions killed raised from 15 to 20% to 20 to 25%, and only include toms on the age parameter. The reason for this proposal is to increase the average harvest age on our very few limited entry cougar units only. Currently, our limited entry units have the same harvest age of lions killed on our split and harvest units. Some of these tags take years and years and years to acquire, and by doing this, we basically would like to see the limited entry units become a trophy tom lion unit for those that put in the time and years to draw the tag. With that said, we support the rest of the plan. We appreciate Darren for letting us be involved in the plan, and all of you guys.
Thank you, Tyler. Spencer Gibbons.
Yeah, Spencer Gibbons from the Utah Farm Bureau. We appreciate the opportunity to make a couple comments. As always, farmers and ranchers throughout the state are always struggling with wildlife, livestock conflict, and it becomes very expensive to that rancher. But we certainly appreciate efforts that the division is making to mitigate those losses with the increase in the depredation fund, but also part of this plan. We accept the recommendation this year. We support it, and we look forward to opportunities to work for you so that there's plenty of opportunity for sportsmen, but also livestock producers are protected, and it'll allow them to be successful in their operations. Thank you.
Thank you. Jake Reese. What, say that again? Oh, so not okay, pass. All right. Scott Reese.
Same thing.
All right. Nicole, not sure how to say the last name. That's the one.
This mainly just regards the cash unit. A few of us that live in northern Utah and hunt those units, we're curious if anybody's thought about entering in a sub-quota for females, maybe giving out a specific number to help decrease the amount of females that are taken on the unit.
Darren, that's kind of a question instead of a comment, but I'll give him a second.
Yeah, currently in the plan, there's no provision for a sub quota. We have done that in the past, but that'd be something we'd have to open the plan and address that way.
So that's something that could be addressed in the next when the
right.
management
yeah.
plan comes available. Yeah. Okay. Kenneth Duncan.
Yeah.
Kenneth Duncan, Morgan, Utah. I've been a houndsman for 55 years running lions, so I do think I know a little bit about the lions. And I certainly want to thank the RAC for their decision last year on the East Canyon unit and backing what I brought up about leaving it as it was as a limited entry. And I would like to recommend that we leave it at a limited entry again this year. I have 11 points, so I should draw this year. And there are several indicators that I feel that should either have you lower it or leave it at that way. And one is that there was 50% lion females taken, which is showing that there's, let's understand that what up the average age was also one of the females was a really old female. Also in Morgan, I understand they've issued last year and this year quite a few doe permits because the deer herd is up at the top of the limit and the lions. So I don't understand why you want to kill off more lions when unless you're trying to, you want to kill off more deer also. Also in Morgan or East Canyon, from what I understand, you have not had any depredation in 10, 15 years on that, on cougars. So I would just recommend that we leave it a limited entry again and see how the numbers go this year. I feel that there'll also be a lot more females taken this year. And a lot of people don't understand that how little of an area it is. It's only from Weber Canyon to I-80 and the Wasatch Front to Colville area. And there's 15 permits for that area right now, 5 of them on a quota, and then the 10 on which you want to go to a split, which would mean there'd be 15 lions killed in that small area. Where a lot of other areas in size are 2 to 3 times that large. So I'd like to have you consider these recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Calvin Duncan.
Okay, Calvin Duncan. I'd like to thank everybody here that, you know, it takes a lot of time and efforts, and you guys are doing a great job. But all I would recommend is that we do study the cougar more. I've learned a lot from my father that there's, like you say, the speculation of a deer a week. I would beg to differ on that one. I've seen, and if that is so at that deer a week, I believe it is because of the coyote coming in and finding the kill, therefore taking the kill, and then moving on, just like the food chain says. So I recommend that we try to find some more data on our cougars. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last comment card would be Kevin Norman.
Kevin Norman, I'm representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife tonight. We want to support the division's recommendations with the following exceptions. On the cash, we do not support the reduction in permit numbers. Instead of keeping, we'd sooner see it kept at 25. The reason for this, I put a little handout out, and we've been throwing a ton of resources at the cash deer herd. It's hurting, as everybody knows, trying to tame the coyote population. And if you look at some of these graphs, as you know, there's the fawn study going on now, and you can see the fawn survival rate on the cache for the last 4 years. Last year was zero. Over the four-year average, it's 27% fawn survival rate, which is quite alarming in the fact of where that herd's headed. I believe it's far from stable, and so. You know, if we have a healthy deer herd, we're fine with a healthy lion herd. But if the deer herd's suppressed, we're also fine with the lion population being suppressed. The next thing would be the Oker Stansbury West. We transplanted some bighorn sheep out there. We're losing a bunch of lions. We recommend an increase to 15 on the Oker Stansbury West. The Central Mountains Southwest Manti. We're with the Houndsman Association on recommending leaving it a split unit, but also maintaining the permit numbers at 18. The Central Mount Southeast Manti, we recommend increasing the number of permits to 26. It's kind of a similar situation as the cache down there. And one of the problems, just to educate you a little bit, is the Manti unit is managed as a whole, the North and South Manti, as far as the deer goes. As far as the lions and the predator control, it's smaller units that it's managed by. And so the North Manti is doing great and healthy deer herds, it skews the numbers on the South Manti significantly, and that herd is suffering, which doesn't quite show in the data. So same kind of concept. We just want to get a healthy deer herd back down there, and we're throwing lots of resources at the coyote problem as well. But other than those changes, we support the division's recommendations. Thanks, Darren, for your hard work, and thank you.
I lied. That wasn't the last comment card. Three more arrived. Mark Thompson.
Mark Thompson, I don't want you to be offended, but it kind of reminds me of a presidential debate going on here. You know, guys facing each other. I haven't picked out Chuck Schumer yet or any of those, but I'll let you know after. When asked Darren the question about the sightings on the cache unit, which have increased substantially over the last 3 years, if that would be related to an increase in population, his answer was yes. But yet I see a decrease on the cache tags. I just encourage you to take a little more consideration on that. Consider the public and the safety of those communities, and maybe reevaluate how many tags you're taking away or giving. Thanks.
Thank you. Devin Kunzler.
Devin Kunzler, I'm from Park Valley. I'd like to clarify something said last meeting by Mr. Johnson over there. He alluded to the fact that all landowners were trying to make him a criminal by killing all the cougars he came across. I'd like to tell him I'm a landowner. That's not true. You're more than welcome to harvest a lion on my property anytime, but I don't want you chasing it. The reason I say that, I think the chase permit is a bunch of, and I'll leave that word out. We had a lion last year we turned out on a depredation tag right in the middle of our sheep. She went up four trees before we were able to finally get to her with seasoned dogs. All the chase permit does is torment them, make them smart, make them hard to kill when they need to be killed. If they're a problem lion, it does absolutely nothing but hurt us. As a landowner and as agriculture, I guess speaking from me, I think the chase permit is inhumane, and I think it ought to be eliminated, or the pursuit permit, whatever you call it. We also, I don't like the fact that in the Raft River in the Southwest Desert area, I believe those were numbers that were dropped. I think they maybe ought to stay the same. We didn't really hunt last year. We were a little busy. We turned out on one lion track, ended up with two lions, killed them both. One of them being that female that we couldn't treat. We don't have to hunt very hard to kill them. There's a lot of them out there. And I don't know why people aren't killing them. I'd like them to. I think that they go out there and chase them, is honestly what I think. And I think that that's a unit per se that is being overlooked, that a lot of people like to go out there and chase, but a lot of them don't like to kill, and that directly affects me. Along with that, in that same unit radius mile, within about a 5 mile radius in about an 8 month period, we had four ewes, four lambs, and a baby horse killed. And you're telling me there's not a lion problem? There is. There's a lot of them. There's way too many of them out in our area, and I'd like to see a few more of them killed, and I'd like to for sure see that pursuit permit gone. It's no good. I don't like it. Thanks.
Thank you. Wyatt Selman.
Thank you guys for your time. I'm Wyatt Selman. I'm here from Tremont. We recently got a sheep herder here this year, and he got to sleep next to the sheep corral for the first time with the sheep camp. The next morning he said he couldn't sleep all night because the sheep were too loud crying all night. And I think the sheep can be pretty hard to sleep next to if they're crying like that, and I think the only thing that would be louder and more annoying would be a chained up hound dog next to you too. And I don't think it's much different with us sheepmen and houndsmen. We're about the same. And I know you guys, I see you nodding there. The reason we're so adamant about this is because, just for us personally, we run on the Box Elder Desert, the cache unit, and the Ogden unit with our sheep. Everywhere we go, we have lion trouble. Just this year, we're up to 20 confirmed losses since May. And 2 weeks ago, 10 of those losses happened on the cache unit. And in one night, a lion came in, killed 7 lambs. 2 nights later, came in and killed 3 more. So I know we say we don't really know how many lions or how many deer lions are killing, but I can go off sheep. They kill a lot, and they can kill a lot in a short amount of time. I support the plan this year. Always like to see tag numbers go up, but I support the way that things are going. We were able to work together, and I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you. Casey Earle.
Casey Earle, thank you for the opportunity to let me address you. So I also run sheep on the Cache National Forest. In the last 3 weeks, I've had 6 documented confirmed lion kills with my sheep, with 6 or possibly 7 known lions in a small area there. So we can debate all day if it kills a deer a week or what, but I know it's killed 6 lambs in 3 weeks just right there. And I know there's more around, but so I'm fairly new to the sheep industry, but I know this is a big hit to me, and it's a big hit to a lot of people in the area, and I know everybody's got their interest to look out for, but I appreciate you guys' time and the opportunity to present in front of you, so thank you.
Thank you. This time, Jake, this one's for real. All right.
Wasn't going to say anything, but my name is Jake Reese. I'm also from Morgan, Utah. I do know the Duncan family. I have the utmost respect for them, but I'm going to have to disagree with the amount of lions that we've been seeing over the past few years have increased. I recently took out my biologist to kind of, we were having some decrease in calf, elk, and some numbers up there, and we saw 3 lions in the middle of the day, just right there together. I ended up seeing 2 more 2 days later in the middle of the day. So 5 lions, 5 days in the middle of the day in the summer and the fall. That's kind of it doesn't happen very often. And we've been seeing fewer calves come home. That doesn't mean I can't go up there and find them and say that it's a confirmed kill by a lion. But we do know that we have had fewer calves come home, and we have been seeing more lions. Whether they're correlated or not, I don't know. And I can't speak for the whole unit in the East Canyon, but I know for our unit, in our area, we do have, I would consider, a legitimate lion problem. Now, again, everybody has their opinion, and everybody's entitled to it. But that's kind of the problem that we've been having. I do support the split for the East Canyon unit to allow some of these cattle ranchers and livestock producers to mitigate and help control a little more of that population on their end. So,
thank you. Okay, that is all the comment cards we have now, so we will now turn the time over for the rack to make comments, and we'll go ahead and begin. Comments from the rack. I know we've got a bunch. Anyone other than Aaron have a comment?
I'm going to wait till the end like the guys that turn their cards in the end so I get the last say.
Let's let Leanne go first.
Yes. Okay.
Justin, a question. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a question for Darren. We've got some pretty specific recommendations from SFW. How many of those meet the management plan for Cougars?
I think for the specific units they talked about, so for the minerals and the Stansbury, those would be outside of the plan.
What about the cash?
Southwest Manti, that one falls into the biologist discretion category, so that could go either way according to the plan.
What about the cash, Darren?
Cash, the only choice on the cash within the plan is a decrease.
Any other comments?
Yes, I got one.
Okay, Junior.
Can't support a decrease in the cash. Excuse me. Because of your Calder lions, we know how many are in a given area because of two that have been killed in depredation. We know that seven lions are in the 5-mile radius in the middle of Logan Canyon. How can we possibly justify a decrease in the numbers? With all respect to Jim, a good friend and the science and what we appreciate you're doing, I don't see how that's how that can be considered in the realm of feasibility.
It might be helpful, Junior, to think about this in two different ways. When we're talking about permits and quota, that's sport harvest. But when it comes to depredation, there's a lot of tools we have to help you guys out. And we'll do what we need to do to help you with your problems. So
just so you know that I can't support a decrease.
I understand.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Darren, why don't you just go ahead and stay there for a second. And I apologize, I'm cheating a little bit because it's a comment period, but just to give you a chance to answer a question. So can the division recommend anything outside of the plan?
No, we need to stick to the plan. The RACs and the board have some leeway. That's up to you. And so we're going to stick to the plan. We don't feel like, you know, we should stray from it, even if maybe we think we would like to, or if we think it's convenient, we need to stick with it. So.
And this plan, if I'm remembering correctly, goes through 2025?
Yeah, and we generally look at those every 5 years, so we're probably looking at a review within the next year or so. Yeah. And we just look at, you know, if there's some new stuff that we needed to address, that would be the time to do it.
Darren, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
When we talk about predation, all you guys tally is documented kills, correct?
That's what we pay for, yeah. Yeah.
Any idea what the total loss is above the documented kill?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard one. You know you know what you went on the mountain with, and you know what you come home with, and that's about it. There's been some studies in Wyoming. They're primarily looking at wolves and grizzly bears, and then Wyoming has taken that research and added, made a guess at what the loss to lions might be in other parts of the state. I think they're 3-1, is that right?
Yeah.
That's the only state I'm aware of that does a multiplier. I might be wrong, but I think Wyoming's the only one. It's tough for us, you know, these are state funds and sportsmen's dollars, and so it's tough for us to pay for stuff that we can't confirm. So that's the current state of things, but that's where Wyoming's gone. But there isn't, you know, that's based on a study on wolf and grizzly take, and then they're making their best guess based on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Of the 25 in the quota for the cash, how many have actually been harvested over the last 3 years?
I think we've hit quota except last year. I think, did you hit them all last?
one over.
Plus one, yeah, so they're taking them every year.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I got a comment. I think everyone on this board realizes that I'm a houndsman. That's my passion. That's how I got on here. When Leslie McFarland, Darren's predecessor, wrote this plan in 2015, she told us, Darren, at that time, and there's people in this room that were at that meeting, that all lions would be counted in the mortality data. I specifically requested that because of the wildlife services and accidental killings by trappers or roads. That could skew a population or hurt a population if we're only counting sport harvest. And she agreed with that. So that's a concern of mine, and I believe it states in the plan that it should. And I don't want to get into that, Darren. We can hash that later. But I think it states in the plan that they should be counted. The recommendations that Darren makes to us, the division has some leeway when they make some of those recommendations, except when the parameters call for a decrease. And then the plan is very straightforward. It doesn't say can, it doesn't say may, it doesn't say anything. It says decrease, command form. Anytime that the plan allows for an increase, it says may. May is the division can do it. And then Darren explained here in his plan that sometimes he's left that up to biologists. And so to your comment, they can't deviate from the plan, but there is some fluctuation in the plan where the biologist can recommend 100% increase in tags or 5% increase in tags or zero, all from the same numbers. And I think they've done that throughout this cycle. Some were stayed the same, some didn't. There was some confusion last year when I tried to bring that up, that some of these recommendations, when a sportsman's group or SFW asks for an increase or decrease, and they say they can't do it, well, they can, but they can't deviate from the plan. The plan does allow for some of that. Took me 14 years to draw a limited entry lion tag, and I didn't harvest one. I didn't find the right lion. I don't know what it takes to draw a limited entry deer or elk tag in some of these states, but it's probably about the same. I champion what the Hound Association says, because some people like to hunt ducks and some people like to hunt elk and some people like to shoot moose and whatever. But if you wait for several years to draw a tag, you should have the opportunity, hopefully, to harvest a mature animal. I know that there's no guarantees in hunting, and that's not what we're asking for. But I love the idea of having some limited entry areas. If you remember last year, we voted to keep East Canyon limited entry for some houndsmen that had a vested interest in that. And now they've moved it back to split, and they want to lock it up for 3 years. So I'm on board with the three-year plan and not changing anything, but I think at least that, the East Canyon, that we all voted on last year to make a limited entry, should go back to a limited entry instead of a split, unless there's a really good reason why it has to be split. I mean, we voted on it last year to be limited entry. Back to the poaching comment. I spent 20 years in law enforcement. There's not a judge in the state in northern Utah that doesn't know me, because I've testified before from that since district court and federal court. Many of them are my good friends. I don't make allegations without proof. So I don't want to go down this nasty, dirty road in public. I would be happy to sit down with the wool growers, and I've offered that to several of the people out there in the audience. Aerial gunning is illegal. It's happening. I've reported it to the law enforcement section of Fish and Game. Bountying lions, a protected species, is illegal. Can we bounty moose? How about we bounty elk that are getting into haystacks? That's occurring. I have asked for years, since I've been involved with the Hound Association, for Fish and Game to investigate lion poaching cases. I talked to the chief. I don't know if he's here tonight. I talked to the chief of the law enforcement section in his office. He's since retired. He told me that an officer would call me and he would take my complaint. That was 3 years ago. Still waiting for the call. Some of my frustration, and Mr. McLeod worked in law enforcement, if someone reports a felony to me and I choose not to investigate it, I'm decertified. Some of the houndsmen's frustrations throughout the years is they call a board member like Tyler Farr or the president like me last year and want some help in reporting a crime, which the division asks for. Turn in poachers. Hey, we know where there's a dead lion that was poached. Will you come and take it off the mountain and investigate it? I can take you to that. I can take you that lion today. You guys didn't pick it up 2 years ago. Not them. So, I know everyone has their opinion. So, it's very clear. My favorite meat to eat is beef. I eat a deer every year. It takes me about a year to eat a deer. I'm 200 pounds. There's not a 200-pound mountain lion. That's never existed. Anyone that's hunted lions knows that. 2,500 lions minimum, Darren said. 52 deer a week, that's 130,000 deer. If they killed a deer a week, next year there would be zero deer. We know they're not killing a deer a week because they're eating all the sheep. We just heard that. So, passion. I'm passionate about ranching. Many people don't believe this. I married into a sheep family, the Broadbents, in Manila. My grandfather and my great-grandfather were sheep herders on the Manti. Of stacks of journals that they wrote about lions and bears coming and killing the sheep and leaving grandpa in the trailer at night. He's crying because great-grandpa's out there trying to kill the bear and the sheep. I'm not a sheep herder. I don't pretend to be, and I don't pretend to understand all of your struggles. But there's a risk in ranching and farming. And those risks need to be mitigated in every single way possible, and I support that. Every year I've sat up here and said the Hound Association Free will use their members to help you guys kill these depredating animals. If the wildlife service officer can't come because he's sick or he's in St. George or he's busy, we will help you free. You don't have to pay. Call. Don't call me because you hate me. We all know that. Zero requests. Leslie McFarland said it really well in one of these meetings. If you're having problems with predators on your private property, open the gates and let the predator hunters in. Thank you, Mr. Kunzler. I've asked Mr. Kunzler's family before if I could hunt there. They said no. He said yes. That's news to me. I'm not against ranching community, and it becomes a division. I sent a text out to a rancher last year. There's a lot more in common with sportsmen and houndsmen than against in ranching. There's a lot more in common. We have a lot more common ground, and it doesn't need to be divisive. We have a lot more, the houndsmen have a lot more in common with SFW than they do against. And I respect everyone's opinion. I really, really do. I didn't mean to open that can of worms, but I know how to document things, and I kept the documents of when I reported this and who I reported to. A lot of these ranchers are getting paid for hunting rights. They have a right to do that. That's one of the reasons they won't let us in there. That's their right. I'm not opposed to outfitting. I support what Kenny Duncan said of moving that back to limited entry. I think we're foolish to vote one way and then change it back the next year, not even see if it's made any bit of difference. I support the SFW and the Houndsman's recommendation to move the Manti back to a split unit instead of a limited entry. That's killing more lions. I don't support increasing the cash. The plan doesn't allow for it. And the houndsmen that hunt up there, the lions are, I know that there's a lot, I get it, but over the last few years, they've increased that unit a lot. They're decreasing it by two. They've increased it by hundreds of percent if you look back in the books that they publish. And now they're decreasing it by two, which is completely justified. I'm sorry, SFW, I don't support increasing 8 to 15. I get it that sheep are important, but there's absolutely no doubt, undisputable, that more sportsmen will get enjoyment out of chasing lions than they will out of 100 sheep out there on the mountain that takes a 1 in a million chance of drawing a tag. Well, I'm for sheep too. I'm not against them. That is bighorn. That's about it. Sorry, I'm a passionate person. I'm sorry if I offend people here. But I was asked to come represent sportsmen, and that's what I do.
Any other comments and or?
I've just got a quick one. I agree with, you know, if we voted one way last year and then to come back a year later and vote some, you know, and accept the plan from the limited entry to a harvest objective, I have a hard time agreeing with that personally, because we voted one way last year. We were convinced that that was the best way to go, and I don't think it's been given enough time to be seen through. So I'm comfortable with that. The plan, I guess if I could encourage anybody that's on that next committee for that, we need to look at that three-year average. You know, this reduction in the cash doesn't really set super well with the guys that have, you know, put money into radio collars on deer and things of that nature. But if there's no flexibility in the plan, that's kind of a tough one. If we change the plan now and we change the plan next time, then why do we go through the trouble of having a plan? And so those are just comments, I guess, things I wanted to kind of share. But that's something we need to consider, I guess, for that next group.
Any other comments and or motions? I imagine this will be, it's Kevin.
First of all, I'd really like to personally thank the division and the work that they've done and this management plan. And I understand that that they are locked into that plan. With that said, I still think that there is some room for the RACs to make recommendations or agree with some recommendations that may have been made. So I would make a motion that we accept the plan as presented with the following exceptions. One being that
limited entry.
The limited entry, yeah, for, pardon? Yeah, what unit? The
East Canyon.
East Canyon, I'm sorry. The East Canyon unit remain limited entry and not go to split. And also that we accept the recommendation of SFW to leave the cash at the numbers and not decrease those numbers with the herd unit like it is, and the winter kill that we've had. I just think that's a good recommendation. And with those recommendations, I would make that motion.
So we have a motion from Kevin to accept the plan as presented with two caveats. One, keep the East Canyon limited entry unit, and also to leave the cash unit at 25 permits. Is there any, do we have any seconds for that motion?
I'd second that.
So motion by Kevin, second by David Earl. Okay, now time for discussion. Is there any discussion that goes with this motion?
I guess I need some clarification. This motion is for two changes and then the remainder of the plan?
The remainder would...
Or just these two changes? I'm sorry.
Good question.
Mr. McCloud, is it the remainder of the plan except the two changes, or are we just voting on these two changes and then we can discuss the remainder of the plan? I guess that's what he said.
My motion was to accept the plan as presented with those recommendations accepted.
Accept those, and then that was yours. He seconded. All right.
I guess my only comments would be is when we have these calendars for some of the more passionate groups of people that show up, and there's several suggestions made, I would like to see in the future that maybe some smaller motions are made so we can hash out some of the motions by sportsmen's group or livestock owners or agriculture. That's just my opinion on it.
I respect that, and I would agree with that.
Change the motion.
We're in the
we can look at
the motion. Do we have to vote on it or not?
It hasn't been seconded, right?
Yes,
it
was seconded. Okay. Yes, we'll need to take a
vote on that. Can I?
We could vote. We could also amend it if we vote on this, Aaron, and it passes, and during the discussion, no, we'd have to amend it before.
Only the Wildlife Board can re-vote.
Yes, we got another comment.
So in regard to the cash, what I heard from the division was that that quota, but I guess really what I heard from the folks here is that it's from depredation of sheep, that that's one of the reasons that you would like it to maintain or increase. And what I heard from the division was that decrease is based on the plan. However, depredation can be dealt with in other ways. So I guess I would say I don't support that motion when it comes to the cash. I support the division.
Well, and then as we vote,
so
you can
amend. So if Aaron wants to amend, he needs to get seconded
before we vote on
deer also.
Yeah. I like how that. So Kevin, if you were to, or sorry, if Aaron would like to make an amendment to Kevin's motion, and then if he agrees to that and we have a second on that, we can vote. And I thought you brought a pretty valid point as far as other options.
What I would like to do is if someone on the rack decides it's important enough because of the discussion to go over each of some of the points brought up by livestock owners and or sportsmen's groups, to maybe vote on each one of those and then maybe at the end vote on the remainder of the plan. That way, now if someone doesn't want to, then there doesn't need to be a motion on that.
I think that's valid, but I also think Emily has an excellent point. If we can address depredation issues with our agriculture people, then we can stick to the plan.
That's a great point. That's part of the discussion of the motion. But
right.
Are we going to vote on it? Are we going to amend it? Is she asking him to amend it? I mean, that's the part I don't understand.
This is my first RAC meeting, so I'm not exactly sure.
Justin?
Yes, Matt.
It sounds like we're going to have to put the cash part to bed. It doesn't sound like that motion is going to pass, just based on the comments that have currently been made.
So So Aaron, I don't know if you could hear that. So if you were to make an amendment for specific, for instance, the ochre unit, that was one of the discussions that we had, or the East Canyon, or any of them. Well, Kevin's motion already was to accept the East Canyon and also the cash, and he did have a second with the cash unit. Your amendment being, if we were to do an amendment, was it something other than those two items?
Both the sportsmen's group that were represented today, at least on the Lions, I know the trappers talked about bobcats, talked about moving the Central Mountain Southwest Manti to a split where the division was making it a limited entry. Both sportsmen's groups supported that. I think that should be voted on. I think that there's that makes a lot of sense and is a valid point. Do you want to make a convoluted motion?
So you can go ahead and amend the motion that way, but you've got to amend it in a specific manner.
Okay.
So could I suggest that if you're open to amending it, you amend the motion so that we're just voting on the cash first?
The cash in the East Canyon?
Just the cash.
Just the cash?
Because if it's going to be a no, it's going to be a no for every single motion.
That's definitely cleaner to vote on these, and then we can put them to bed. But, like I say, there's been a motion and a second. We have to decide
to
vote or not.
I say, can Kevin withdraw, or do we have to vote now? He's willing to do so. Yeah.
Kevin, to put you on the spot, would you be willing to withdraw your motion?
I would be willing to amend the motion to include that Ochre Mountain recommendation.
Well,
and because it was requested, suggested by both sportsmen's groups, we can go back and vote on everyone individually. I'm hoping that we give. I agree with what's been said, that we give study and reason to everybody's comment and what they like. Frankly, the comments that I heard, for the most part, were just let us kill all the lions that we can. And that's not something that we can really look at. We've got a plan that we've all agreed to follow. But I understand those requests, but those specific recommendations that have been made, such as the East Canyon, the Ochre Mountain, the cache, I think we can address those either collectively or individually.
Kevin, would you amend it to just vote on the East Canyon and not the cache. Just the East Canyon and the plan, and then do these other ones separately?
That's fine. Yeah. It sounds to me like the cache is going to be probably more of a challenge than the other two. That's fine. I would amend my motion to accept the plan as presented.
No, we can't do that.
Can't do that and then go through and dice it.
So, okay.
You can make it. You can do it.
I disagree, but okay. All right. So let me amend my motion to specific to the East Canyon question and recommendation. I recommend that we accept that recommendation. And take that one individually, then we can go to the next one.
East Canyon stays limited entry.
Yeah, East Canyon stays limited entry rather than going to a split.
I'll second that.
Okay, I think we've had plenty of comment. Let's vote on that and move to the motion. So all those in favor of the amendment to the motion that was on the table to limit it to just the East Canyon unit remain limited entry. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 What do we have there?
Hold your hands in there.
Junior's up or down? In favor or against?
I'm going to pass.
Okay, so that's. Can
I abstain?
Okay, your reason for abstaining?
Because I think we got to get rid of the first motion before you can go and vote on the second one. You got to clear the floor, you know.
That was what I attempted to do. If I didn't do that correctly, that was the intent. So please tell me how I did that correctly.
I think that it was. I withdrew the motion and amended the motion to.
Okay, now you're saying you withdrew the motion. Yeah. Okay, well, I didn't hear that. Excuse me.
Okay, so with that knowledge, in favor?
Yeah, I'll be in favor.
Motion to keep the East Canyon at a limited entry unit passes unanimously. So now with the...
So why don't we... Let's do the cache next.
So that's what give me just a minute. I would like to, with the permission of the RAC, let's do this on an individual basis on each unit. The ones of concern, I believe that we had East Canyon, the Manti. Will you write these down in order so I can have that?
I'm chatting them out to you.
Okay, so we have East Canyon's done, so we're done with that.
So Manti.
The Manti, the Cache, the Ochre, and was there one other one? Beaver East, or Beaver West. Okay.
I'll make a motion on one of those, if you're ready, Justin.
I'm ready.
Which one? So the one that I want to make a motion on is the Central Mountains Southwest Manti. I make a motion that we recommend that that hunt strategy is a split unit and not a limited entry.
Do we have a second on that motion? We have a second by Matt Clark. Discussion.
The reason I made that motion was because both sportsmen's groups supported that, so it makes a lot of sense. Additionally, by moving it to a split to a limited entry, it should increase lion harvest. That's one of the reasons that both groups wanted that, is it gives more opportunity, more hunters to buy a harvest objective tag later in the year and harvest more lions.
Okay. Any other discussion or comments? Let's take a vote. So the motion is to... So the division's proposal was to make it a limited entry, correct?
Make it a split.
Our motion is to change it to a split, correct?
Yeah, change it to a split from the recommendation of limited entry.
Okay.
And that falls within the plan, right?
And that... Okay, so... The motion is then the Central Manti South. Help me with the name of that unit.
Central Mountains Southwest Manti.
Manti unit to make this unit a split unit. And we have a second with Matt. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
One, two. Is that unanimous? That passes unanimously. Thank you. All right. Yes.
I would make a motion that we support the SFW recommendation to leave the permit numbers on the cash unit at 25 rather than reduction.
I'll second that.
Who was the second, Junior?
Yes, please.
You got that.
Sorry, it was.
Who are? Okay. No, as far as our motion, who made the motion and who's done it?
Say it one more time, Kevin.
Kevin made the motion and Junior seconded it. The other one, just so make sure we have it, the motion was made by Aaron and seconded by Matt. Okay. All right. So we have a motion to leave the cash as to 25 permits, and we have a second by Junior. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Did I count correctly? Six yays. Those opposed. One, two, three, four, five. Thank you. All right. My concern with this unit is when we talked, I understand the plans, but the parameters as far as how the winners hit, the number of deer that I'm going to go ahead and vote that we remain it at 25 permit. So... The cash, that motion passes 7-6 with me making the deciding vote.
Are we going to talk why we voted?
Yes, I think that's fair. So those who voted opposed, let's start on this side if that's okay.
We've had a lot of discussion over the years about the plan, and they're put in place, they're 5 years, they're They're supposed to regulate and manage our wildlife and our sportsmen. And for me, it was the plan. You know, there wasn't the flexibility by the biologist to make that decision to do anything but decrease. And I had to support the plan.
I agree with that. And based on the division saying that there are other means in place in terms of depredation, and I did hear the concerns of the producers, so.
I agree with all that. Also, with the winter we had last year, I know we had 100% fawn loss, but so regardless if we had predation prior to that, we were going to lose those fawns anyhow, so.
Who was right? Was it?
Yeah, you're next.
I just opposed it based upon the plan, and there are other ways to address predation problems.
Okay.
Same for me. In addition, we just approved this for 3 years. So we approved keeping the number the same for 3 years, even though they've been out of the management parameters for the prior 3 years.
Okay.
I'll just repeat everything that was said. Okay. The plan does not allow for it to stay at 25. The plan requires it to be dropped. Additionally, we had the biologist come up and say of their collared deer, 17 fawns died and 2 are from lions. So I don't know that you're going to save more fawns by increasing lion tags. There's obviously something else killing them more, like coyotes.
Okay. Thank you. Well, now, is there another motion would be, or more, another unit that we would discuss? Is there any other motions that anyone would like to make? Let's go with the ochre. Does everyone recall what the numbers were, or what the division's proposal was on that one?
It's an increase from 4 to 8 is what the division's recommending.
So the division recommendation is to increase the ochre from 4 to 8. Is there any, do we have any motions or?
The reason I wouldn't make a motion is that they're increasing it 100% from 4 to 8, and they're asking it to be increased up to 15. Is that almost 300 or 400%? That does not fit within the plan. The plan allows for a 100% increase, but there's nowhere in the plan where it allows for a 4.
So that was SFW's.
Right. So the division's increase it, I think, what they can. If that's the fact, someone said from 4 to 8, and I didn't check that number.
It is.
So, okay, so they want to increase it 4, and there's been a sportsman's group, the Sportsman's for Fish and Wildlife, wanted to increase it to
15.
So they would be increasing it 11 more tags, correct? Okay. Do you have any comments, Darren, on that?
We do have concerns about predation on sheep out there. We have had some losses to lions. We've taken some lions off the mountain. We increased it the maximum that we could. So 100% is the most the plan will allow. So that's what we did, but we can't go beyond the plan. So does that help? Maybe that helps. I don't know.
It does help.
Would you increase it more?
Okay. Any motions to either accept it as proposed or any other motions?
Well, I just think we don't need to make. This is my opinion. I'm not going to make a motion on the ochre unless somebody else on the rack feels that needs to be made.
We can include that
fall
in the plan.
In amongst the other part of the presentation. The only other motion I would like to make, and this is my opinion on these bullets that were brought up by the sportsman, is a 2-tag increase on the Central Mountain Southeast Manti. The Hound Association's asked for a 0. That fits within the parameters of the plan because we've gone over that's a decision. This is coming from local sportsmen that hunt there. Granted, the local sportsmen that were in favor of the increase probably live down there and want a few more lion killed. My concern is I'd like it to stay 0. I'd like it to run for 3 years.
And
so are you going to make a motion on
that? So yes, I'll make a motion that, sorry, that there's a zero increase on the Central Mountain Southeast Manti. The division proposed a two-tag increase. I'm making a motion that it's a zero. It stays the same as last year for Central Mountains Southeast Manti.
Do we have a second on that motion too? Okay, well, kill, or that dies for the lack of a second. Any other motions? I believe that we, as we decided to break it down, the Oakers was one that we were going to vote on. Is it? Can we? Is anyone ready to make a motion on the Oaker? Or are we corporate and the rest of the plan?
Okay, I'll make a motion that we accept the rest of the plan as presented by the division.
I'll second that.
So Aaron, okay. So Aaron made the motion to accept the remainder of the plan as presented, and he has a second by, we'll go by Chris on this one. Kevin's had a chance. So, all right. Any more discussion on this before we vote? All those in favor of accepting the remainder of the plan as presented, please raise your hand and vote. Say aye.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously, I believe. Did I see? I didn't see Dave's. Okay. All right. Sorry. Okay.
Justin, can I make one quick comment to Darren? The Hound Association gave us a letter, and they had some things that they wanted brought up in the line. Do you have a copy of this letter?
I do. And, okay. And the last thing is something we ought to look at when we revisit the plan.
When we revisit the plan. Thanks, Darren.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for their participation. If there's no further business and there's no objection, the meeting will be adjourned. Any objections? I don't have a gavel, but meeting adjourned.